What's going on, my friends? Welcome back to another episode of the Mental Corner Podcast, the show where I bring on guests from all different backgrounds to talk all the things mental health. I'm your host, Harry Poffin, and today I have the absolute pleasure of being joined by David Hernandez. David is the founder of Body by Purpose and the creator of Elite Champion Fitness Academy, which is a company designed to equip individuals mentally, emotionally, and physically to reach their potential and fulfill their purpose in life. David was such a blast to have on the show, and I really want to thank him again for coming on and having this discussion with me. It's definitely a topic that I think a lot of us can relate to. I myself can relate to this topic very heavily, so I really appreciate David taking the time to talk to our listeners. Now, of course, if you're listening, please like, comment, share, subscribe, give 5 stars if you're on that podcast platform. Share with someone who might want to hear this episode. It's a really great one, and I can't wait for you to listen. I'll talk to you all very soon. Have a great rest of your day. Peace. We're good to go. Dave, what's going on, man? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, brother. Thank you, Harry. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate the invite and the acceptance on me jumping on.
Yeah, of course. So my first question for you, what got you inspired to, you know, get into the health and fitness industry? Like what inspired that move?
Great question, man. Ever since I was a kid, I've always been involved in sports and just really attracted to, the profoundness of a body and kind of what you can really do with the body. And I remember just falling in love with athletes, and then that kind of carried into bodybuilders and really just being amazed with how you can sculpt and shape your body. And I had a childhood best friend. We did everything together, and I'd always encourage him to kind of work out, do healthy things. He was one of the kids that was kind of the one that didn't fit in very well. He was the slower of the bunch. He was overweight. He was husky. He was kind of the oddball of many of our friend groups, but he struggled with being accepted, and he struggled with his weight his whole life. And I remember just as we were in high school and he battled with that himself. As we graduated, I moved to Miami. He stayed in Texas. And at the age of 21, I got a phone call that he had passed away. He had died. He had gotten so obese, and he'd gotten so desperate to get the weight off that he went to get a gastric bypass surgery. 2 days later, he got an infection and he died. So in that moment, it was that exact expression right there. It was like, what the heck just happened? You know, I felt guilty. I would blame myself. I'd beat myself up because I thought I could have done more. And I lived with that guilt for about 8 months until I finally realized, well, there was not much more I could have done. I did as much as I could based on how I could help him. But I did know that there was something more that could have been done to avoid him going through that. I felt his death could have been avoided. And so in that moment, I said, well, I can't change his life anymore, but I do want to make a commitment that as long as I know of somebody, or if I can impact somebody else's life, avoid them going through what my best friend went through, I wanted to do it. So at that time, I was already kind of in the industry. I was on my own journey, but I really pressed into that, man. I took this dark moment, this loss, and I really saw it from a perspective of what can I learn from it and how can I gain from this experience. I lost one, and I wanted to make something of it. And that's where the whole journey really started for me, man. Just really helping and making that my mission, making that my passion, making that my heart cry, to help people avoid becoming to the state of obesity to where they can ultimately lose their life. And that's where we're at 16 years later, still holding on to that promise. And here we are connected now.
Yeah, man. Right on. No, I love that. That's, man. Wow. It's, yeah, it, I don't know. I find it interesting that we're not talking about like the stuff that I wanted to get into with you more, like the stress eating, the emotional eating, like the overeating just in general. Yeah. I think it's a topic that's often brushed over when in reality it should be like talked about way more.
Totally. Yeah. And it's such a serious topic when we're talking about overeating. And poor eating habits alone is one of the leading causes to 86% of all non-communicable diseases, which causes 11 million deaths each year. Hmm. Think about that for a moment. 11 million deaths each year because of poor eating habits. And I did a research, and the CDC did a study, and they felt that 40% of all non-communicable diseases related to heart disease and cancers and different things like that, 40% of all of them could have been avoided.
Wow.
And it simply comes down to taking responsibility for your health and choosing health, right? Choosing to live a life of health. And it really comes down to, well, so how do I do it, right? There's so much talk about it very vaguely, like you should. But the bigger question is like, how do I do it? And why, if I've attempted it, am I failing at it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think instead of supporting these people, well, it's really quick to point the finger and to accuse, right? Or to blame and not talk about this topic and expect that people should ultimately just stop eating or stop making that food choice or go to the gym more, as if that's really going to be the cure to their issue. In reality, it's not. So through my whole years of this industry and kind of researching and taking my own approach with my students and my clients and then leaning back on my best friend's experience, I really came down to the piece that is missing is people's relationship with food is not being addressed. And the psychological understanding that they've adopted of food. Because if we think about it, we all have our own psychology of food.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning we all see food a different way. Food has a different meaning to us. Food choices are distinct for us. The feelings that we get with foods, everything is different. And in that, it stems from our relationship that we've developed with food. Relationship isn't just a personal thing. We're in relationship with our parents, family members, workers, friends, dogs, all that stuff, humans. But there's also a connection of relationship that we're developing with everything around us. Mm. We're in relationship with our money. We're in relationship with physical things. And in that, we're in relationship with food. And your relationship with food has stemmed from the moment you were introduced to food.
Mm.
From when you were born up until, give or take, the developmental years, which is between 0 to 7, are the most strongest foundational developmental years. Well, in those years is how we're learning things in life. And one of the things that we learn that we don't address is how our relationship with food is going to be. What foods were around the house when you were growing up? What foods were given to you? What choices were made for you in terms of food? What choices did your parents make? Did your grandparents make? What foods would they have around the house? All of those things start to shape your relationship with food, which then impact your own psychological understanding of food for you.
Mm.
And if that's not addressed, my man, it doesn't matter what you try to do. You're going to stay stuck in that behavior pattern. Why? Because we've already been conditioned in that way. We've been taught that. Our neurological connections have been created around these things, which is why it makes it hard for us to stop making certain food choices, even though we know they're bad for us, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Did you ever have an experience, or like, have you ever experienced in your life negative relationships with food?
You know, for the most part, I think I've made it a big purpose of mine to be intentional with that one area growing up, because I was so fascinated with that. I always leaned more onto the healthier nutrition type of foods. I did have to make a choice because growing up, I was raised in a Mexican home. The Mexican culture is one of not so good for you food, right? Not mm-hmm. the healthiest of foods. So I did, though, realize that in my family, there was a pattern that was repeating. And in that, it was obesity. A lot of the family members on my mom and dad's side, they were all overweight. And I had to make a choice. Do I want to follow those steps, follow their quality of life based on the choices that they're making? Or am I going to decide to make new choices and different choices to have a different outcome? And so in that was really understanding that the food choices they were making was really shaping their life. And so I really, from a young age, my brother gave me a book, which I'll never forget. It's called Body for Life by Bill Phillips, old school book.
Mm-hmm.
And that book really set a foundation for me to really understand, well, what does it take to be healthy and eat healthy right? And that's what's been kind of my guide since a young age, man. So I don't think I necessarily can pinpoint and say I've had a negative relationship with food. I've made unhealthy choices, right? I think we all can at some point. One of my favorite foods is pizza and hot Cheetos, right? Mm. But because I've adopted a healthy relationship with these foods, I can still enjoy them without them being something that controls me, right? In a negative way.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What was it? Was it hard for you to like grow up and build a strong relationship with food while at the same time you were immersed in like the Mexican culture where the food was generally unhealthy?
Yeah, because there was a lot of times growing up, you can't say no, mm-hmm. right? It was like you had to eat it. And so what I did learn though growing up is how could I still enjoy or eat the foods that were given to me, but without abusing them? And that's really where it started to click for me. It's I can't control what's being given to me, but I can control how much of it I eat. Mm. I can control how often I eat certain things. If there's cookies and things at the house or whatever they give, I mean, it doesn't mean I have to eat them all in one sitting, right? It doesn't mean I have to serve me a whole bowl of all the things that were in the house, even though it's part of the culture, it's part of their grandparents always had it around. But I quickly started to understand that it's about how much of this I can eat or should not eat to then be able to at least control that one factor that I can control versus the others that were out of my hands growing up. Then once I was old enough to make my choices, right, based on the foods I wanted to eat, because I was now paying for them, then that's a different ballgame. I now was able to control that at a greater scale. But yeah, there was definitely some challenging. And I think in life, we're always going to be thrown with certain challenges. And it's really about simply understanding if we can get a hold of what some of these principles are. What does food do to us, right? How much of it is an appropriate amount for me, right? What certain things do certain things to my body? It gives us a better understanding to make better choices mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. I can totally relate to that because I grew up in an Italian family. And if you don't get seconds, like you get hit with the spoon, it's like it's you need to eat. And so I was a kid who just indulged because I was like, well, I mean, I have to.
Like it's, yeah. Yeah. But even in that, psychologically, it starts to shape us and form this idea of food around that principle, right? Mm-hmm. I had one of my students who was raised in their family was struggling financially growing up, and he was told that, you know, everything was scarce, so they had to be thankful for everything that was there. And it was like you had to finish everything. And because there was scarcity and you were forced that with what you had to eat it all. Growing up, he developed this really weird relationship that even though he's not hungry, the lack of food that he had growing up and the gratefulness he should have caused him to overeat in every aspect. And it was like he could, if there was still food on his plate, even though he was full, it's like, no, I have to finish it. I have to finish it. I have to be thankful for this. I've got to be grateful for this. I can't throw it away. There's other people that don't have it because I once had it, right? So all of these little things, they start to really create some distortion in our thought process and this idea of how we're viewing food, that if that continues to repeat, long-term effects can become very destructive.
Right, yeah. What are some of the, like, the most common, like, some, how do I even word this question? What are like some of the most common relationships or like mindsets towards unhealthy eating that you've noticed with your clients?
If at any point you were taught to deal with your emotions with food, I'll give you an example. Let's say young Harry comes home from school. He got in a fight with his best friend, had a terrible day. His mom comes, tries to give you some love. Everything's going to be okay. But with that, she also brings a cookie and she says, hey, have this cookie so you can feel better. Mm. You eat that cookie, right? What does that do now in that moment? You've now created a very small connection that says, if I'm feeling sad or angry, I can go to a cookie to feel better. Why? Because mom validated. She said it was a good thing And if mom's my example and role model, I'm going to think it's okay. It happens again. Mom does it again. You start now developing a stronger connection with that. There's going to come a point where you're no longer going to need mom to bring you that cookie. You're now going to go grab it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So being taught to deal with certain things around food is one way that we start to like develop these unhealthy relationships. Another thing is, like I said with one of my students, that you're raised in a financial struggling situation, right? In a home. There's lack. You are given certain amounts of foods, or you're not given certain amounts of food, in that we get this mindset of rarity because I didn't have it when I was younger. Now, as I'm older, I want it all. And I have this out of control feeling and desire to have these foods and to eat them, right? Another one is, if at any point food was a reward or a punishment for you growing up, you did good and it was always celebrated around food. As you grow older, that pattern is going to magnify in the form that everything now that you feel is a good thing for you should be and will be celebrated with food. And what happens now, it then not only is celebrating a reward, but now it's also stimulating that if you don't eat, you now feel as if you're not being successful or you're not doing good. So then now we try to find validation through food that then leads us in an unhealthy state, right? If food is used as a punishment, let's say you were forced to eat food that you did not like, right? It can go the opposite direction. You can now be against certain types of foods that then can cause you to lean to unhealthier foods to try and simply satisfy, well, that I don't ever want to eat because I hated it growing up. This brings me more satisfaction, so I'm going to lean more towards these foods. And then there's the opposite that can actually lead us to not eat, right? If it's used as punishment, we may go the other direction and start not wanting to eat, therefore not wanting to eat certain foods that then will cause us to go into other eating disorders that can also become toxic, right?
Right. That's the thing. It's my mistake too. When we're talking about stress eating or unhealthy habits, I only think about the one side of it where it's overeating. You almost always forget the under eating.
That's right. And a lot of that, even most and oftentimes, eating disorders can be stemmed from a traumatic experience in our life. Mm-hmm. And that can go, again, both ways, right? It could be the non-eating, anorexia, bulimia side of things, or it could be the overeating, the stress eating, the binge eating, right? And in that, it's really looking at what was my childhood like, because many times the circumstances that lead us to these unhealthy eating patterns stem from our childhood. Mm-hmm. What was my environment like? How was I raised, right? What type of things was going on in my homes? What types of foods were readily available to me? What experiences did I live? Was there violence? Was there emotional chaos in my home? And it doesn't necessarily have to be physical abuse, sexual abuse, or verbal abuse, right? It could just be my mother died at a young age, then my father died at a young age, or I lost my best friend, right? In that, that could have been something that could have impacted me to have fallen into some of these unhealthy habits had I allowed it to, right? So there's a lot of studies that also link how trauma can produce 40% more cases of overeating or eating disorders in men and women that have gone through at least 4 traumatic experiences in life. And again, trauma is anything related to an emotional state that causes you to be enhanced immersely into these emotional states, right? Mm-hmm. Loss, divorce, losing a job, you lose a loved one, getting in a conflict, getting in a car accident, all of those can be traumatic experiences. And studies show that if you've gone through at least 4 to 5 of those in your lifetime, well, you're 40% higher at risk of falling into some type of eating disorder.
Is that just because you go to food for comfort, or is it like, what's the link there?
Yeah, the link is the emotional stimulant that you find through food.
Oh, right? I see.
Because when we look at food, what we've got to understand of food is that it alters the chemical components of our body. Like it literally activates certain feel good feelings in our body, especially when we're talking about sugar, right? And processed foods, those turn into sugar. They are sugar. Therefore, they impact the reward response area of the brain, which is dopamine, which makes you feel good, mm-hmm. right? Oftentimes when we're young, we lean on food. Why? Because it's always there. It's always available, even as adults. But it typically stems from that pattern at a young age that we develop this. It's never going to say no. It's going to always make you feel good, right? It's going to be, it could be a texture thing. It could be a flavor thing. It could be a satisfaction that you get based on feeling some type of emotion. So we're going to lean to the things that make us feel good when we've gone through some type of traumatic experience or some type of emotional experience, right? And when that starts to develop, that neurological connection, that is where it starts to become a strong bind and a strong grip on ourselves that makes it hard because now it becomes a part of who we are. It literally now rewires our brain. Neurological connections are linked to these emotions based on these experiences that you've gone through. How do I deal with them? Food. That pattern is now going to be embedded into your subconscious and into your neurological connection, which then now makes it hard for you to stop doing those things because you've done them so much.
Mm. On that note, like how do you think the whole pandemic and COVID, how do you think that impacted the overall relationship with food in our society?
I think we have two different cases where some realized, oh my goodness, I need to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. There's a health issue happening, right? I need to start doing something, which opened the interest and the curiosity for people to start exploring other things. Then there's the other group that really got immersed in the whole experience and the trauma and the pain, right? That brought, especially when we're talking about isolation and we're talking about having to be stuck inside your home and not being able to have any connection. Well, that impacts you subconsciously and psychologically. And again, because food makes us feel good and we're looking for something to make us feel good when TV shows stop doing that, right? Or when other things around us are no longer stimulating that, well, we tend to go to things that will do it immediately in the moment. Mm-hmm. And food is generally the one that does that. That's typically the common choice for 86% of all Americans. I did a research study and I found that 86% of all Americans have said that at some point or another in their life currently today, they go to food to release their emotions or their stress, right? Mm. So pandemic had a lot to do with it. But if we look at it, the overarching issue here is the relationship that we've already adopted from the very beginning that is now, regardless of what happens, it can either increase it or it can keep it at the same level. And that's what these, you know, pandemics or scares in life can produce. And more often than not, for many, it's going to increase that anxiety and that release of emotions towards food.
Right. So let's say if you, as a child, you subconsciously developed this unhealthy relationship with food and you never really addressed it until now. How can you start to notice like, oh, maybe my relationship with food isn't so healthy? Because when you're in that, it's almost like you're in a state of like brain fog, I guess, where you don't,
absolutely,
you're unable to identify it once when you're in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very simple things to look at is, when you are in a stressful situation, what is the first thing you go to, or what is the first thing you think about, right? Because look, we all have coping mechanisms, and that's literally what food is to many, right? Mm-hmm. It's a release mechanism. It's a coping mechanism. We all need it as human beings to survive. Otherwise, it'd be a zombie apocalypse. We'd be killing each other everywhere we went, right? Right. And in that, it's looking at, well, when something happens to me, what is the first thing I tend to want to lean to? For me, when something happens, the first thing I want to lean to is going outside and walking or getting away and doing something physical, right? For others, it might be, I want that food. I want those chips. I want that ice cream. I want to grab some. I want that pop. I want, right? And so it's really awareness is the number one thing here, which is why when I'm working with my students, I put together what I call the food behavior quadrant. And it's a four-step process that we literally break down and we walk you through to start bringing awareness to yourself about what you do. Because until we don't recognize that we're actually doing something that is harming me, even though I might know of it, but I don't actually bring it to my heart to recognize, yep, I'm doing this, and I no longer want to do it because I understand the outcome I'm getting, it's going to be hard to stop. It's going to be hard to change that. So the first piece is we really have to have awareness of recognizing, what am I doing? Am I happy with the choices that I'm making? If not, okay, how can then we start focusing on what is it that we're doing and why am I doing this? Where is these choices stemming from? Because all of this is learned behavior. Mm-hmm. If we can identify where they come from, how they started, right? Where they have originated from, it's going to allow me to give me some understanding to take control over what I no longer want to do. Because the reality is most of our relationship, the way we've developed it, it's really hasn't been our fault. Because when we're looking at our young age, like, you couldn't control that. It was out of your control. Now, as an adult, you have the power to be able to take control to change those things. But we first have to eliminate the shame and this judgment and this guilt that we have, this embarrassment that we have around it. Because the true honest thing here is that it wasn't your fault. You were taught this. And when we're talking about stress eating, emotional eating, binging, there's a lot of shame involved with that. So if we can take off that first layer of shame and help you see where it came from, okay, cool. So it's not something that I necessarily chose, right? You might be choosing it right now, but it wasn't your initial choice from the very beginning. Then mm-hmm. from there, we can start looking at, okay, what things cause you to lean to food, right? So the first layer, the first part of the food behavior quadrant is really identifying the root cause. Where does all of this stem from? We've got to understand what the root cause is, where everything is stemming from, to be able to then have the possibility of uprooting it. Then the next thing is, well, what triggers you? What things, what circumstances, what issues, what situations trigger you or make you lean to go to food? Because if we can understand that, we can have awareness about that. You're going to understand yourself and be in alert to be able to recognize that if stress, because somebody is putting too much demand on you or too much pressure on you, or somebody is rejecting you, or somebody is, I don't know, being rude to you, and those are the things that get you ticked, that trigger you, well, then now we can be in alert and be able to recognize, huh, this just happened, so I might be inclined to go to food, right? So it gives us now information about ourselves. And then the next layer would be looking at our physical and our emotional responses. That would be the third part in the food behavior quadrant, because everything that happens stimulates an emotion and stimulates a physiological response in our body. If we can understand what that physiological response is, what that emotional feeling feels like, then it's going to be an alarm, an alert system that's going to let me know, be careful, danger, you've just been really impacted, you might go to food. Mm. Again, it's information, it's awareness, right? And then ultimately, it's really looking at, well, why do you go to the foods that you go to? What are those coping foods that you lean to, right? Why is it the Lay's? Why is it the Doritos Locos or the Doritos Ranch, right? Why is it that, and why isn't it another brand? Why is it this particular type of food and not this other one? Because even in that, we've associated it from some type of pattern in our life. Mm-hmm. So again, it's about gaining information, because then we're going to take all that information and use it to our advantage to then now stop us and help us to put an end to this behavior pattern.
Right. How long does addressing all these quadrants usually take? Because there's so much stuff here.
Look, I had a student that nailed it in a week, and she was able to put an end to her sugar addiction in a matter of a week, right? Wow. There's others that take a few weeks. There's others that take a few months. It's there is no set number here. It's really about your intentionality that you're willing to put into this, and really just simply understanding the concept that we're working here, because it's literally changing what you've, making you unlearn what you've already learned. Mm-hmm. In a very systematic, basic approach about gaining information. And then the last piece is really now starting to rewire and adopt this new behavior. And it's done by literally now stopping ourselves when something happens to us that is triggering us, or an urge comes, or a craving comes, right? And I've developed a power declaration statement, which helps us and guides us through being able to change that behavior pattern when we've been triggered, when we've been urged, when the craving kicks, right? But again, we won't be able to do that unless we recognize what is our current behavior pattern look like. Because once we understand that information, we take the power declaration system, that declaration, and we repeat and we say this declaration, in that while doing the new behavior pattern literally starts to change our brain, and changes our neurological connections, and changes the way we do this new behavior now.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get any pushback from clients when you dive into this stuff? Just because I feel like, you know, when you're told, hey, your relationship with food is unhealthy, or like even just addressing the fact that you have a bad relationship with food, you have an eating disorder, you're obese, like all of these words can be triggering to one's ego.
Mm-hmm. And I think until you're not at that place to where you're really willing to want to give that up, because look, sadly, there's a lot of people that want to release weight. They want to live healthy. They want to, with words, right? But they're not at the state ready to be able to take the actions to it, right? Mm. They're willing to try all the diets out there. They're willing to try any quick fix, right? Any pill. They want the fast solution, thinking that's what they need to change their life. But in reality, what we need is to just be ready, but be tired, become sick and tired of what you're living and going through, and just be willing to change it one step at a time, right? So the kickback is before people get started, because when somebody's ready, they deep dive in it, and it's so incredibly amazing what they go through and how their life just changes. But I believe, as in anything, we got to be ready for it, right? We got to really want that change, because what we've put together here is really to give you that. But if you're not wanting that life change, or you're not wanting to give up these set behaviors or these set habits because it's more comfortable to be there and to live in that life, well, then the question now comes back to you, right? Do you really want it as the individual, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one of the big problems, and I've dealt with this personally when I was trying to lose weight, still kind of am, but like when you try to lose weight or you try to get healthy, we're always looking for such a quick fix, like you mentioned. Yeah. Or we want that quick validation. We want to be able to post that stuff on Instagram, like, look how good I look, because you see it all the time. You don't see people, hey, look, this is my healthy habit that I learned for months before I finally nailed it. Like, you never see that. You just see, look how shredded I am, or look how fit I am. It's a strange time to be in for that.
Well, the bad thing is that the fitness industry has destroyed people because of that. Mm-hmm. There's a documentary that's called Bigger, Stronger, Faster. I highly recommend everybody see that documentary. It was done by, I forget the gentleman's last name, but his first name was Chris. It was done back in 2008. And he literally unmasks the way the fitness industry has falsely advertised and marketed what the fitness industry is, but how they play off of your emotions, right? And the reality here is that they don't care about you. They are painting an unrealistic picture for you, playing on your emotions, right? Your vulnerability and your desperateness and your desperation to want to change, that they are activating this quick fix, I want it now, instant gratification mindset and desire that is unachievable because it's unrealistic, right? It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen simply by taking this pill. It doesn't happen. And they're using, athletes and bodybuilders that are on, enhancing supplements, to just use that word, right, that are taking drugs, that are doing things that are helping them get to there. You see that picture, you see that model, and you say, wow, if he did it using this supplement, then I should be able to do it. That's fake. That's not real. It's not how it works, right? And so, yes, but when we understand that our health is, it's ours. It's about me. It's about my process. It's about my journey. Screw who everyone else around me. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. It doesn't matter what everybody else is achieving. This is about me. Why? Because you're your own best value. You're the only one that's important here, right? And in health, I believe we should be selfish, because it's one thing that we benefit from, but the only one that can actually achieve it is you, by doing what you need to be doing to achieve it for yourself, if that makes sense. Because when we look at and really eliminate the shame that, like, yes, when you're obese, when you're struggling with eating disorders, there is some shame attached to it. But the number one thing I do from the very beginning is to eliminate that shame, because there is no shame around that. You're beautiful. You're amazing. You're a human being. Yeah. Did we make some bad choices? Yeah. Okay. We've all done that in life. The bigger picture is, let me guide you so you can change that. Let me show you that you can do it, right? So the biggest mission of mine is to bring hope to those people, to bring hope to those that say, no, I've failed too many times. This isn't going to work for me. No, no, no. It does work, and it can work. This is how we're going to do it, right? Because when we understand the principles that drive the results, what's the difference between you and me when it comes to health is that I've got a bit more understanding than you do about the principles that drive results.
Mm-hmm.
I know more about certain things than you don't in this particular area, that if you can allow me to simply show you what those things are, you can also reap the benefits and the reward from it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so much shame. It seems like I've had friends who are overweight, and I've had friends of friends who were extremely overweight. And it just seems like once you get to that point, I mean, obviously this is just from my personal experience witnessing it, but like once you get to that point, it's almost like you accept the label of, oh, I'm the fat friend, or I'm the big friend. That's just, I'm big boned. Like, that's just who I am, without doing any of the work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the reality is that this starts to impact who you are as a person. And when we stay stuck in any certain type of life, right, whether you are struggling financially, there's going to come a point where you're just going to believe that you'll never be able to make money, and you're just going to, this is the destiny that life had for you, right? Whether you are overweight, whether you are single, well, I guess I'm never going to find somebody that loves me. I'm alone all my life. This is all what life had for me. That's not the case. That might be the case for you in the moment, but the reality is that everything that we're going through in life can change.
Mm-hmm.
It can change, right? So if we, as me, what I focus on is to really focus on that mindset piece that will allow you to recognize, look, you can change that. You can change that, because the problem is that when we fall into these behavior patterns, it starts to shape our identity, and it impacts the not only the life that we have, but who we become, because it goes from, I've adopted this habit, right? Therefore, this habit is giving me this life. And because of this life, I now feel I'm this.
Mm.
But here's the beauty of it. If we go backwards, who you are, your identity, your quality of life that you're living can be changed by where it stems from, the root of it, which is the habits that you're doing. So if we can change your habit, and we can change the things that you're doing, the root causes, which are the habits that you've adopted that are giving you the quality of life, that are changing and impacting your identity, if we focus on that, and you join me on this journey, and you allow me to guide you through this journey, and you give yourself permission to join yourself in this journey, and we start changing that habit, what do you think then is going to happen? If the habit's the problem, we change the habit, you're going to then have a different quality of life. Your life is going to change, And if your life starts to change, your identity of the person you are is also going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts by addressing what is causing me to be in this place, which is that habit, right? The things that I'm doing that are causing me to have the life that I have, which is ultimately impacting how I view myself or what I believe about myself or my identity. So the point to why many get to the state of when they've become unhealthy and obese is they don't feel they have value anymore. They don't see the value in them. They don't feel sufficient. Loss of self-worth, right? They don't have value. They don't see value in themselves. They don't love themselves anymore. So why continue to fight for something that I don't love or has no value? Matter of fact, it goes the opposite direction. Well, since I'm already in this pit, screw it. Let me just continue to destroy myself even more. If I'm not worthy, if I'm not worth it, if I have no more value, if I'm not loved, if I don't love myself, why even try? Let's just destroy it faster, right? And so then it becomes into that very dark pit that now we start to hurt ourselves and it starts to become self-afflicting with every choice that we make.
God, it's so heartbreaking when people don't realize their value.
Yeah, it is, man. But look, there's a large majority of people that are in that place. Right? Mm-hmm. And look, get it. Sometimes life isn't easy. Sometimes your life hasn't given you the best, right? But it all comes back to just because you're in the place today doesn't mean you have to stay there. Doesn't matter what you've gone through, you might be stuck today. That doesn't determine who you are because we can get out of there, right? And no circumstance should ever determine who you are. Nothing that happens in your life is literally determining who you are. Yeah, life could have thrown a bunch of curveballs at you, but it doesn't mean that you are that what you've experienced. They're just circumstances that you lived. You have the ability to decide and dictate who you are going to become.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it's really in that understanding that, look, your situation and your current situation of life can change. It doesn't matter how dark it is. It doesn't matter how terrible it is. Cynthia, one of my students, she came at me. She was 59 years old. Desperate. She was close to 300 pounds. She couldn't stand for more than a minute. She couldn't walk for more than a few steps. She was about to be wheelchair bound. She had tried everything that she had known. And she's like, if I try one more thing and I fail, I don't think I can do it because it's just going to destroy me. She would lose it, gain it back twice as much, and just this terrible roller coaster life. I told her, hey, I can help you. Trust me on this. Just follow my lead. Allow me to help you. We can change the situation. Scared as she was, she tried it, right? We went along this journey together. And fast forward now, she's lost close to 100 pounds. She's got her life back. She's able to walk again after going through two knee reconstructive surgeries and dealing with breast cancer. She defeated both of those, dealt with both of those. Through this whole journey, she battled two reconstructive knee surgeries and breast cancer. Right?
Wow.
And is now living the life that she's never had in over 30 plus years. So if we take a situation like hers and she can change, there's hope for very many, right? There's hope for all of us. And in the sense that there is no thing as the end unless you decide to quit and just say, I'm not going to fight anymore.
Right, man. Yeah. Well, Dave, I've got two last questions for you, and they're kind of similar in a sense. But the first one I have for you is, if you're like a friend or a family member of someone who has an unhealthy relationship with food, and you know that they should probably get the help that they need,
yeah,
but you don't know how to approach that topic with them because it's such a sensitive topic. Like, how should those friends and family members approach those people?
Yeah, in a love. It all stems from love, right? Accusations, judgments, and trying to correct and fix people do not work. All they do is create more resistance and more rejection towards what we want them to do. And it always stems from getting people to really find within them what they truly want. Because I promise you, no person wants to be struggling being overweight and unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Nobody does. You know, there might be the very few occasion that like the benefits that they're getting and they like to have everybody loving on them and they don't want to change their situation. Remember, there was a gentleman that he'd become so obese, he was in a wheelchair, and we said, come on, we can help you. He's like, no, I like being here because I don't have to, all my medication is paid for. I get all the attention. I get all the love that I want. I like people helping me to do things right. Like that's the rare occasion. But oftentimes most people don't want to be in that place. So if we get them to start desiring or speaking about what they would like to have, what they would want to achieve, what would you like your life to look like? Create curiosity to allow them to start speaking and desiring a certain style of life. Then when that happens, we can then come back and look at, well, what do you think today is stopping you from having that life or having those things? It's really about allowing them to answer their own questions to be able to then recognize, oh my goodness, yeah, this is hindering me. Then we open the opportunity and invite them to say, well, would you like to then change that? Yeah, I think I would. Because now they have themselves explored that, have spoken what they desire, have recognized that these patterns are stopping them from doing that. And now we are inviting a question, would you like to then change that? If the answer is yes, then we can present them a possible solution. Otherwise, we can't force it, right? We can't make anybody do anything. And the best way we can do that is through kind and love, but bringing curiosity to allow them to start discussing or talking about what they want. Because a lot of times we want it, we want them to do it for us because we want them to have the best life.
Mm-hmm.
But what about them? What do they want? What do they desire? It always has to be about that person. And if we get all the attention on them, for them to speak on what they want, then we can help and guide somebody get closer to that in some way.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And then on the other side of that coin, if people are listening who maybe are those people who have the unhealthy relationship and they still need that little extra, I don't know, convincing, or like they want to get help but they're not sure if they should, or they're hesitant, or they have all that shame, what would you want to tell them right now if they're listening?
Very simple is, are you happy with the quality of life that you have today? If the answer is no, then I invite you to explore and look at, what are the choices that you're making today leading you to? If the choices that you're making today are not making you be in line with the life or the quality of life that you truly desire to have, if we don't address those, nothing will change. You will simply be pushing yourself further away from the desired life that you want. So the simple question here is my choice that I'm making today in line with who I want to be and who I desire to be? If the answer is no, then I invite you to this opportunity to start focusing on how can we address these choices and these things that I'm doing today so that I can, instead of pushing myself away from the desired life, I can actually push myself closer or bring me closer to that. And if that's you, well, I invite you to connect, right? We can definitely connect and have a conversation and look at how I can support you and serve you. No obligations, no strings attached, just simply how I can serve and how I can support you with what I do.
Right on, man. And on that note, where can people find you? Where can people reach out to you and find all your work?
Absolutely. On all social media platforms, you can find me on my handle at Dave K. Hernandez. That's D-A-V-E, K as in kite, H-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-Z. Find me on all social media, and you can also visit me on my website, www.davidhernandez.co, davidhernandez.co, and also on my podcast, Listen, You're Not Defeated.
I love it, man. I'll put those links down below. Dave, thank you for coming on the show today, man. It's been a blast.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you for having me. Anything I can do to support you, please don't ever hesitate to reach out and keep crushing it.
Of course, man. I appreciate it. And to all my listeners, I will see you guys next time.